And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
True art is when you throw a dart. True art is when you stand there and fart. True art is if you have a heart. True art is if you used to shop at Kmart. True art is when you eat a Pop-Tart. True art from the start. True art that's set apart.
Good morning, Swim World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, November 16th. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, got Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tass? Got my Top Shot hot boy. Ooh, he's riding high right now, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo! We've got the international man of mystery taking it to the Max Lielis.
Friends.
Last, certainly not least, making the magic happen, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. And so are you. Shout out to the stream team for joining us live right now on YouTube. Everybody, make sure you subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Take a second to like the video. Comment away, both live and later in the YouTube comments, and share the show. That's the number one thing. Tell your friends about No Dunks on YouTube. Got some new shirts for you guys. Teased them yesterday. You can go grab these now. Got a Pacers No Dunks tee, because we love talking about Indiana on this show. And we got a No Dunks Classic Factory, paying homage there to the old Skybox basketball cards. We got to pop a pack in one of those, eh, Lili?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Fun.
Yeah.
What happened to popping packs? Come on, man. Let's get to it.
It's still around. It's still around. We'll get back to it at some point.
Is it, though? Is it still around?
Well, it's around. It hasn't been killed off just yet, but It'll be back at some point, JD. You've been on it. You featured. You actually did quite well when you were on it. Maybe you and I need to pop a pack one time.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
This guy's ready, man. This guy's, he's got nothing to do all day after this show. He just sits there in his garage for like 8 hours after this show. Let's get to popping some packs, man. Good news, guys, before we get into the games. It had been, I believe, 10 days since our last wedgie, but we got one last night. The Bulls can do no wrong right now. It was really Dwight Howard, if we want to give him credit, I guess, on blocking
Ayo's.
Yeah, exactly. Little layup attempt there. So, wedgie number 7, that's good. It had been a hot minute, like I said, since we've had one. Way to let it breathe.
Yeah, too, it was everybody. Up there for a hot minute.
Stuck there for a good minute. So, 7. You know, the pace task has slowed down significantly because, like I said, we didn't have one there for a while, but it's okay. You know, they come in bunches, so I'd assume we'll get one. Maybe 2 in the next couple days here. That's how it usually goes.
Come on, Wilson. Get stuck there for a sec, would you?
Come on, Wilson.
Come on, Wilson.
We've got a lot of games to recap here. We'll try and get to most of them. Some of them we'll get to a little bit later in the show, especially the Nuggets-Mavericks game off of the Luka Doncic injury there, tweaking his ankle at the end, and a couple other games. But we got to start in L.A. It was the last game of the night. DeRozan and Zach LaVine, they lead the Bulls to the 121-103 shellacking of the Lakers. And a little side note here, Anthony Davis tossed. He's like, hey, let me put my shoe on. And he got very quick there. But
you don't put your shoes on against the Bulls. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, Trey, this was a dominant performance there, you know, especially in the third quarter where they just blew this one out of the water.
Yeah, an 18-point win for the Bulls. But like you're saying, Skeets, wasn't even that close. Someday the Bulls won't be the best story in the league, but that day is not today because for the first time in 10 years, the Bulls swept the Staples Center series, and they did it on back-to-back nights. That's right. The Bulls are emphatically and officially back. This was an amazing performance from the Chicago Bulls. DeMar DeRozan hit a 3 with 6.5 minutes left in the first quarter, put Chicago up, and they never gave the lead back the entire game. Eventually, they stretched it out to 28 points before garbage time. DeRozan was, as Stacey King kept saying, DeMarvelous. He was deep in his bag last night. Both Stacey and DeMar, the footwork from DeMar DeRozan, some incredible shots, looking like Michael Jordan, looking like Kobe Bryant there in the mid-range with the little shimmy shake in the post. Had an awesome take off the dribble as well to finish around a whole bunch of Lakers inside there. He finished with 38 points a night after scoring 35 against the Clippers. Zach LaVine apparently wanted him to go for 40, which DeMar could have easily done if he stuck around, but he said he was too tired from carrying the team to two wins on back-to-back nights. Start the MVP buzz right now. LaVine was solid as well. 26 points, six threes. He had five threes in the first half, helped blow the game open. Another highlight dunk off a steal. I love seeing him chase down the loose ball and just outrace all the other Lakers to the other side of the court. Great stuff. Another LA guy, Lonzo Ball, monster game. 27 points, seven threes, eight assists. He was dancing and hopping for almost the whole fourth quarter. Anytime he hit a three, I was screaming, "Welcome to Big Baller Zone!" And finally, an awesome game for Derrick Jones Jr. He's kind of settled into the backup small ball five role with Vucci out, and it's been perfect for him. 13 points last night, two assists. Adam Amin called him D-double-J, which is, you know, accurate, but I don't know. It doesn't totally roll off the tongue. Nonetheless, great stuff from Billy Donovan. The Warriors and Clippers, they both really trapped DeRozan and Zach LaVine pretty hard in their couple of games. And it took until the second half of the game against the Clippers to figure out Tony Bradley ain't making plays out of the pick and roll. So right. Derrick Jones Jr. kind of slotted in there. He was attacking the rim. He was kicking the ball to the corner when need be. Just a huge day for the Bulls. They got the win. They got Anthony Davis kicked out because they were D'ing him up so hard. They got Tim Bontemps to come to me a week early to say that the Bulls are back. They got John Hollinger to admit his preseason predictions were inaccurate. He said they are emphatically back. On the very same day that John Schumann put them at number two on his power rankings, just behind the Warriors, they go out and get the huge win over the Lakers. Even Skeets was tweeting C-Red last night. Everybody's a Bulls fan deep inside, so pretty good stuff from Chicago last night.
Crazy, crazy, Lee. I mean, I love the enthusiasm here from this guy. I mean, they look amazing, and I asked in the headline for this show, hey, look, does it get some clicks? Let's hope so. But do you see any similarities maybe between this year's Bulls and last year's Suns? And what I'll set that up with, especially like the two guys that are getting it done, be it last year, Chris Paul and Booker, and by the way, we'll get to them winning nine straight too. They're continuing to get it done. But those guys, I think there's some like comparisons there with how DeRozan operates in the mid-range and is just dominating games right now. And then LaVine sort of playing the role of a Devin Booker. I see the similarities, and I think there's a couple more, but maybe I'm reaching. What do you think,
Lee? Yeah, I can see why you're going there with that with the mid-range game, because DeMar DeRozan, he knocked down two threes last night, but that simply isn't really a part of his regular game. He's just so lethal, though, in that mid-range. And once he gets to his spot, and if you go back to DeMar DeRozan's early Raptors days, remember he just couldn't really... He just didn't have the expertise to get to where he needed to go to. And now just experience and time and being in the league and being around for a long time, he just knows now, a bit like Chris Paul in the sense that, like, just I'm going to get to my spot and I'm going to pretty much knock down these mid-rangers time and time and time again. He did it against the Raptors earlier this season, and he has done it a lot for the Bulls. And it's just given their offense, especially late in games, so much more belief that they can actually close out games. That's something that they hadn't been able to do before, because it was sort of relied heavily on Zach LaVine, who can hit the three, he can get inside, but he doesn't sort of scare opponents like DeRozan does, because it's just that repetitiveness and that consistency that he's developed over years. So this was an incredible performance, really, again, coming off the on the second night of back-to-back. The Lakers were as well, and of course LeBron wasn't playing there, but that doesn't really matter. I thought the Lakers looked awful last night. Davis had an okay game before he got that unlucky ejection. But I also just think that the Lakers aren't that good. I mean, they're starting Carmelo. And if you've got a guy out there who's starting, and I know that's due to, you know, somewhat to injuries, and Bazemore's not giving them anything. So Vogel's like, well, let's just try Melo because he has been good for them. But, I mean, the Bulls had this game from the start, and the Lakers were never really close. So I think they beat up on an opponent that isn't very good. But I do like, and I'm glad Trey brought up the Derrick Jones Jr. stuff here, because he hasn't really done a whole lot for the Bulls so far this season. Billy Donovan found a role for him and an idea for him, and he really slotted into it perfectly. He may go back to the bench in the next few games and not really have much of a role, but in last night's game, he came out, played it well, saw what the other teams were doing defensively against Chicago, and exploited that. So that was really good coaching from Billy Donovan.
Yeah, Billy Donovan, he's just not smacking on that gum. He's thinking about ways to make Derrick Jones Jr. and the Bulls better. And this was a back-breaking game for the Lakers, though. Just coming into it, they recruited DeMar hard in the offseason. They wanted him to come home to L.A. He wanted to come back to L.A. LeBron and Anthony Davis courted him over and over. They ended up going with Russell Westbrook, and then he drops 38 in their eye, looking phenomenal, looking like that complimentary guard that they would have loved to have. And then the Alex Caruso homecoming where, you know, they they didn't give him the same offer that other teams did. Not only the Bulls, but Minnesota Timberwolves reportedly did that from Bill Oram. Great article about Alex Caruso's summer and how he went into it. And he was waiting at the phone. And Rob Pelinka called 2 years, $14 million at first. God, no thank you, Rob Pelinka. And then it got bumped up a little bit to 3 for $21 million. But the Bulls gave him that number that he wanted, at least $30 million guaranteed. And now he's in Chicago, where he's never driven in snow, apparently. He's going to be doing that big winter tires dance, hopefully, as Michael Grange said. Yeah, it's tough to drive in snow. But yeah, he had a 0 point game.
I was going to play 35 minutes. Yeah. He took one shot. Yeah. And he's
solid
plus,
0 point game.
Yeah.
That's what he does. That's how that's how he helped the Lakers win a championship. And, Lonzo Ball as well, the former guy that Magic Johnson said would have his number retired with the Lakers in his first press conference. And he dropped a quiet 27 because of what DeMar did and what Zach did. That was tough for the Lakers to see that. Yeah, of course, no LeBron. But they did have a pretty easy schedule to start this season, the Bulls notwithstanding here. They had 12 of their first 15 at home, and now they're 8-7. Now they go on the road for a 5-game road trip, and hopefully LeBron will be joining them soon so Melo can go back to the bench and things can become a little bit more normal. But, yeah, the DeMar over Russell Westbrook would be a heck of a difference right now if you had DeMar out there doing whatever he wanted to do as a complimentary player. Man. Must be feeling good for DeMar DeRozan to go from, kind of under the radar for several years, got traded to the Spurs after being traded for a guy who helped the Raptors win a championship and Kawhi Leonard. And now he's on the stage, man. This is the Bulls All-Star. He's been by far their best player.
They got two All-Stars right now, though.
Yeah.
They might be the starting backcourt for the Eastern Conference.
Very well could be. Yeah,
if it were tomorrow, for sure.
It's not the Nets, that's for sure.
These guys are efficient as hell right now. Just to link DeRozan, or continue, I guess, to link DeRozan to the Lakers, I saw a wild stat from Stats Perform. DeRozan became the first player since Shaq during the 2000-2001 season to score 35-plus points while shooting 65% from the field or better in a back-to-back road set. I mean, that's the key part of that, very nitpicking stat there. But that's... that's wild. I mean, that just proves just how efficient he has been. What did you think about the toss, Lee, of Anthony Davis there? Were you surprised with what the hell was going on? I mean, it felt quick. I mean, who knows what was said, but he did lose his shoe. He's trying to put it on. Ref's like, all right, let's play. And then he was very upset with that. What did you think?
He must have said some horrible, horrible thing to the referee. That was nowhere near deserving of a tech or foul. Unless he just said... well, I'm not going to say what I think he must have said, but the referee's very sensitive to that, to throw him out.
Right.
Because I imagine he just said, hey, you're supposed to wait for me to put my shoe on before you give the ball to the player. And he must have just littered that with obscenities at the same time. And the ref just, again, he didn't even really sort of hesitate. He's just like, all right, that's it, you're gone. I know it was his second tee, so he automatically gets ejected for it. But yeah, unlucky. I mean, the game was over anyway at that point. But the Lakers and Anthony Davis, I think, may appeal this one and see if they can get it rescinded, because I don't know what he could have said in the window of about 2 seconds there that the referee took an enormous offense to and decided that was enough for him.
Yeah, it was very quick. But yeah, in the end, would it have mattered? No, not with the way the Bulls were playing. And the Bulls felt, well, I guess from the Lakers side of things, they looked really old to me last night. Oh my God. It felt like the Bulls were hitting a three in transition, or semi-transition, the trailing guy, all the time. You know, you watched the game, of course, Trey. Did you sort of have that opinion as well?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the Bulls are at their best when they're pushing it in transition, because Lonzo has had a really solid season for the Bulls. He's still not an incredible half-court creator, but he's great at catch and shoots. He's great with the hit-ahead passes. You saw so many times the Bulls were the team who was throwing, like, the three-quarter court outlet pass, which I thought was pretty surprising. I mean, when LeBron is healthy, that's a way that the Lakers have made hay since they've been there, chucking it up to Anthony Davis. It was totally the Bulls. You know, Lonzo had one to LaVine there in the second half on the very next possession. LaVine had one to Lonzo, and that was just kind of the story the entire night. The Bulls looked quicker and faster and more athletic, and that's why it was a highlight fest. The thing with Davis, like, yeah, he had 20 points. The guy took 9 shots. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe whatever he said was whatever he said to the referee. Seemed like a quick toss, but he also seemed happy to go because he was just not locked into this game at all. Like, the Bulls ran out Tony Bradley and 4 guards, and Davis just wanted to hang out on the perimeter. That is not the way the Lakers are going to get any sort of wins with a LeBron out of the lineup.
Yeah, this was the game where they needed Davis to be just a bully underneath and say, you're going to foul me 20 times and I'm going to take as many high percentage in the paint looks as I can, because there's no one really
there.
Well,
he had done it the night before against the Spurs without Pirtle, but yeah.
Kind of, yeah. But I think a lot this season, Davis to me just looks exhausted for the most part. He just, maybe he's not 100% healthy, maybe he is still recovering, but he doesn't seem to have that high motor in him right now where he's just like, okay, tonight's a matchup where they need me to dominate. And he just didn't seem to. He seemed to sort of settle a bit. And that's been a concern for me, because they're not getting anything out of DeAndre Jordan, obviously. And Dwight as well. He doesn't give them anything. So they've got 3 bigs. But honestly, last night, you wouldn't know. You would think the Bulls had the advantage because of what they got out of Derek Jones Jr.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep it going here. Lots of games to touch on. The Suns fended off the Wolves to win their 9th straight game. Lele, What'd you take from this one?
Well, I've got a masterclass ad read coming up later in the show, but really, masterclass could just nice post piece. The last quarter of the Suns and Wolves, and because Chris Paul gave a lesson in how to close out a game. 19 points and 2 assists in that fourth quarter of a game that the Wolves played well enough to give themselves a shot to win. But the big difference came after the Wolves led by 5, 88-83, about 3.5 minutes to go. Then Chris Paul hit just an incredible 3-pointer off another missed shot. Oh, they got the offensive rebound. D'Angelo Russell comes back, hits a 2. Chris Paul goes into his little mid-range zigzaggy shot that he knocks in. And then on the next play, finds Devin Booker to tie it up. And honestly, the Timberwolves dropped their shoulders from there. They were like, we know what's going to happen from here. We've seen this story play out a million
times.
Yeah,
we know D'Angelo Russell's going to take a shitty shot coming up.
Yeah, goodness. Yeah.
What are you doing, man?
But that to me is what I've seen from the Wolves a lot this season. They don't have that killer instinct of like, we can win this game. They don't believe they can win this game. And they had it. They were playing really well last. Well, I shouldn't say playing really well. They were playing well enough last night. But DeAndre Ayton came back, by the way, for the Suns last night. And, oh my God, their pick-and-roll defense on him from Minnesota was some of the most atrocious defense I have ever seen. He just walked into the paint so many times. And it was one of those situations where, you know, guy comes back off a knee injury. He wants to see the ball go in, you know, the old cliche. Well, it's easy when he just walks in and they just drop the ball off to him time and time again. And he looked incredible for his first game back. So that, combined with Chris Paul closing it out, combined with Minnesota unable to close it out, gave the Suns their 9th straight win, and Minnesota just dropped another game. You really saw the difference, too, in the sort of old man style of game from DeAndre Ayton, kind of bullying a little bit in the paint, and Karl Anthony Towns, more a modern big, stretching it out, shooting threes, played a decent game. Anthony Edwards wasn't very good for them last night, but they just didn't have that killer instinct, and that's something that they need to get, because they've been in a lot of games this season and it comes down to execution late, and they're the team that is unable to do it on either end of the floor. But again, when you get Chris Paul, and Chris Paul, you know, the rip-through move is not a shooting foul anymore. They're trying to stop the embellishment. They're trying to stop the guys, you know, conning the refs. Well, Chris Paul still knows how to work all of those elements to get some free throws. He did that against D'Angelo Russell. Russell was kind of reaching a bit there, but Chris Paul really thumped his arms into Russell, and the ref kind of had to call it. He didn't really have a choice at that point. But incredible performance again from Chris Paul and Booker as well, who started off slow. But in that sort of fourth quarter, it was those two guys who just showed the difference between a team that believes and made the finals last season and a team that's just like, we always lose. We're going to lose again. And they did.
The Wolves are in desperate need of a veteran point guard. Someone to actually run stuff through the guys you should be running through in clutch situations. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns had a good game. I mean, he had 35 points. He got to the line a ton. He hit five threes. Yes, he's one of the best three-point shooting centers we've ever seen in this league when you look at percentages. But in the final couple minutes, Trey, he doesn't even have a shot. It doesn't even go to him. Now, a part of that, yes, is on him, but also you need a floor general, in my opinion, to get him the damn ball and to say this is where we're going because this is how we got into this situation in the first place. And instead, it's D'Angelo Russell. Just he tries to be a hero. And when it goes in every once in a while, great. Ice in my veins. It looks awesome. You'll be on the top 10. But so many times it doesn't. And I think he went 1-for-6 down the stretch. They had one nice play, like out of bounds, on the sidelines play where he spun around. He got a nice little layup. That was great. But all the other shots he's taking, it's like these wild, like, what are you doing heat checks? It's just not a great point guard play, in my opinion.
Yeah, 35-13 for Towns. I think he had 16 in the fourth quarter, but like you're saying, Skeets, didn't have a shot or a rebound the last 2-18. That's why the Timberwolves keep losing these close games. Part of it, no doubt, is that Russell goes into ice in my veins mode, and he just wants to be the one who hits the game-winning shot is what it feels like, and, you know, he is an off-the-dribble creator, I suppose, but they would certainly love to have Ricky Rubio there passing it to Anthony Edwards or honestly getting Towns involved in some way. I put as much of it on Towns, though. Like, you're 7 feet tall, man. Literally grab a rebound and put it up for an offensive rebound. Go near the hoop sometime instead of just waiting for somebody to pass you the ball. So, I don't know. Maybe he's too nice to D'Angelo Russell. That was a large reason why the Timberwolves got him in the first place is because they're close friends. But you need somebody better. I don't like Russell has to go or Towns has to go because that pairing doesn't work because Towns will take the back seat and he's the most talented player there. I mean, maybe outside of Edwards. Who knows? Those two are it's a toss up, but Towns should be better. Like he had an awesome game and then he just completely disappeared for the last 2 minutes. And it happens all the time with the Timberwolves.
Yeah. What do you think, Tess?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's not really much of a pecking order there. It seems like all three guys are sort of on the same level because they traded Andrew Wiggins for the very reason that he needed to take a backseat to Karl-Anthony Towns. And they traded him for D'Angelo Russell. They attached a draft pick that became Jonathan Kuminga. And wow, did the Warriors win that frickin' trade. And now D'Angelo Russell's taken shots in the last final minute there of a game where Karl-Anthony Towns won them this thing. He had an incredible fourth quarter. 3.5 minutes left. They're up 5. Karl-Anthony Towns is yelling and screaming.
He was going crazy. Yeah.
He was feeling good. And that's when you give your franchise player the ball. And yeah, the last 2.5 minutes, Russell took 7 shots and Towns took 1. And Russell, it's something that has to be either rectified with trade or a real sit down with this guy to tell him this is just not how it's going to work. I mean, even if you think or the pecking order is that they're on the same level, when the guy is scorching hot like that, he has to have the ball more. And that's it. I mean, just go through him. Even if he misses, I mean, this was his game. He had 35 freaking points. So that was what happened in the last few minutes. Whether the Suns were good or not, the Wolves were just horrendous. And I'm sure the Suns looked on the other side of the floor and saw a team that, you know, kind of looked like them a couple of years ago. Oh, you can't close out games. We have the confidence that now after going to the finals, we feel like we can beat you. And the Wolves had to take this one from them and could have just helped by giving it to Karl-Anthony Towns a little bit. I mean, he wanted it so bad. Especially if you're buds, if D'Angelo Russell, if you're friends with Karl-Anthony Towns, and you see your buddy yelling and screaming and being as demonstrative as he's ever been on the floor, and you don't give it to him, you just keep shooting it, keep like slinging that lefty shot that he can get at any time in any place when Karl-Anthony Towns is having a great game. I don't know. Not a great friendship, IMO. Just let him rip, man. Just let him go score. He is one of the most talented players in the league. And yeah, they're trying to bounce back. They're trying to find their way. And unfortunately, they traded that one Wiggins sort of, the mess up with that hierarchy and that pecking order for another one now. And the Warriors have found a way to, yeah, we got Andrew Wiggins, but you're not taking final shots. You know who you are on this team, and he's freaking found an incredible role, and he's playing well over there, but it's not happening with Minnesota right now.
Well, that goes back to my original point. The the Suns' fortunes changed when they got Chris Paul. When they got a guy in here that knows how to operate in the fourth quarter, who should get touches, can get his own bucket, of course. Just like complete control of the game. Now, I've looked around the league, Lee. I can't find another Chris Paul, I don't think, for the Wolves to go get. But hell, maybe it is someone like a Dragic that I'm sure they could get in a trade with the Raptors who really don't have much need from him. Maybe there's someone else I'm forgetting. They need, like, to me, a vet point guard that maybe is not starting games by any means, but you can have some trust in the final couple of minutes to get you over the hump. And maybe there's another name that I'm forgetting that you thought of. I don't know.
Not really a name, but I think the word there is trust. And I think that is with Dragic, that he can take the big shot, but I think he understands as well it's more important to get the guy like Towns the ball, or Edwards, whoever it is, open for that right shot. But Russell isn't that guy. Russell is the guy, like you guys are saying here, that's like, I'm going to try to take over and win this game. And he went 1-for-10 from three last night. And he has those moments, there's no doubt about it. But those moments really do come few and far between compared to nights like last night, where it's like, again, the Wolves had a chance. They were really in this game, but they just did not know how to execute. And when you've got a point guard who doesn't know how to, then it's hard to see how the team can overcome that. So, yeah, he's got a big contract, though, and I'm not sure even what his trade value would be. Yeah. Like, you know, he certainly has his moments, and he can get hot, but I just don't think you can trust him late in the game.
People in the stream team pointing out that John Wall does rhyme with Chris Paul.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I said Dragic, and even I would like counter myself a little bit. You know, he is a bit more of a scorer than maybe a playmaker, but he's a veteran guard in this league. So there is, again, it goes back to trust a little bit. But, you know, let us know. There's some sure those other ones, like people are saying Malcolm Brogdon. Yeah, he would be great.
Yeah, of course he would.
He can't be traded, but he would be fantastic as, like, just a sound guard to try and take it.
Chris Paul.
What about Benjamin Simmons?
Ben Simmons. Well, I mean, the Wolves, that was the one I said was always going to happen. Ben Simmons was going to end up on Minnesota. But
he certainly wouldn't run into him not shooting the ball late anyway. So that would be the opposite problem for Russell, to be like, okay, at times you got to shoot it.
You got to shoot it, man. Yeah. They'll be saying the opposite. But I mean, also, like, what's the deal at this point for Morey to get Simmons to Minnesota? I mean, I guess a hell of a lot of draft picks and what, Russell's got to be included, and is Beasley there? I mean, I don't know. It becomes a little more difficult to try and figure out what Morey would be all that interested in trading Ben Simmons. Okay, well, let's keep it going. Another hot team, Trey, the Wizards.
The Wizards. I'll be honest, not super impressed by beating the Pelicans. The comeback is nice, but first half leads aren't real. The Wizards played one half of basketball and got the win here. I was ready to dunk on them. Tell you, they're only beaten under 500 teams, which is true. They're 6-2 against teams that are under 500. But unfortunately, the Washington Wizards are also 4-1 against teams that are over 500. So let me swish their wand a little bit here, Skeets. Okay. Tale of two halves in this one. The Pels up 19 in the first half. Who cares? The Wizards got it almost all back right at the start of the third quarter. A 17-3 run in the first 6 minutes of the second half. Cut into most of the deficit. Spencer Dinwiddie hit three threes. That really got the Zards back in the mix. And they finished things off in the fourth, kind of similarly, 14-0 run down the stretch. Played a ton of defense and got little contributions from basically everybody. Two threes for KCP, two for Kuzma, four assists for Dinwiddie, a bunch of free throws, an MVP chance for Montrezl Harrell. It was a great team win for the Wizards. No Bradley Beal again, so Dinwiddie and Aaron Holiday stepped up. A nice game for Denny Abdia as well. But I'm most impressed with the defense by the Wizards. They held New Orleans to 100 points in itself. Not a huge accomplishment, but that's the sixth time this season the Wizards have held an opponent to 100 or fewer. They did that five times all of last year.
Yeah.
Having these players who know where to be and who are going to give a solid effort every night has been beneficial to the Wizards. They can beat good teams and bad teams alike. Another classic for Washington. I don't know, Skeets, you're taking a little bit of credit here, saying calling them the Zards has really changed the season for them.
Tongue in cheek, to be honest, but yes.
We might have to start calling them the Wiz because they're stacking up the W's.
Dubs. That's right. Yeah, I can't believe they don't do the thing. I guess the Hawks were doing it, right, with their Twitter account where you start putting the W's?
Yeah.
How are the Wizards not doing that? You know, at what point? What's the streak got to get to, Lee, where you start putting the W's in there?
I would think, you know, three
eight
is enough.
W's in a row? Three?
I think
okay.
Three, yeah, because then,
well,
you know.
Well, they're already that bad.
Yeah, that's a spelling mistake. Talking about actually former Lakers not being able to close out, Brandon Ingram missed like five at least shots in that fourth quarter in the last 5 minutes. Now, they weren't terrible shots, but just not able to knock them down. That really did affect the Pelicans as well there late. But you just felt that the Wizards were going to get out of this somehow. You know, a 19-point lead in against any team in the NBA is easy to come back against. And Spencer did step it up in that third quarter especially. And there was a play at one time where Daniel Gafford got the block and it went to Spencer Dinwiddie, who found Denny Avdija. So it went from Dan to Din to Den for the deuce. I was going to tweet something like that, but
nice.
I couldn't. I was workshopping it, but I couldn't quite get it out there. But yeah, good stuff from the Wizards. I mean, because this is not a team that we, you know, seriously are putting into a, like, certainly a top four in the East right now. And if they dropped the game like that last night, that's when you just go, see, this is a team. Yeah. You don't need to believe in this team. But instead, they do come back and they do get a good win in front of their fans. And I thought the Pelicans for 3.5 quarters actually competed in this game and they just got overrun really in the end. So, you know, it was a fun game. I enjoyed watching it. I'm enjoying the Zards right now. Keep it going, Zards.
Yeah, they, I mean, look, 3-0 without Beal. I think what's fascinating is, like, they've missed Bertans for half the season, Tass. Rui Hachimura hasn't played at all. And even Coach Unseld has, like, been asked about this, like, you know, are you worried maybe at all when all these guys come back and you got to find a role from them, which could be, you know, difficult when you're playing this well and you're winning these games and the guys that are like flourishing right now, you don't want to take minutes away from them. But, you know, he sort of said, maybe we overthink this stuff as coaches, you know, just more players, more great players, the better for you. You just rip the Band-Aid off and see how it looks is to quote him there. But yeah, what'd you think of the Wiz last night or them moving forward here?
Well, a couple signs of a real good team. First, they let a team that they should beat be up 19 points against them. You know, the good teams do that. And then in the fourth quarter, they put the clamps on them at home to win the game. It looked like the Pelicans were going streaking. Looked like they were going to win their second game in a row for the first time this season, as they've only won one game, or they've only won two games now. The fourth quarter where, you know, the Pels played very well through three quarters. They were up, up seven going into the fourth. It scored 80 points. But, yeah, the ball stopped moving, and they just sort of relied on Brandon Ingram, who just came back from injury. And, unfortunately, he couldn't put it away for them. But it looked like a win that the Pels were going to have. And then the Wiz, yeah, they tightened the clamps defensively, as Trey said, kept them under 100 there. And like the Knicks were going to get to, like, you let some teams, even the bloody Pacers, get out to big leads. But in the fourth quarter at home, you just need to play one incredible quarter of defense. And that's what happened against this Pelicans team that, yeah, it's sad. It sure looked like they were going to get a W. They obviously look like the worst team in the Western Conference, worse than the Oklahoma City Thunder. How is this possible?
They're worse than the Rockets?
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a nice battle there between the Rockets and Pelicans. Yeah, they're pretty bad. You talked about a team just having to play like one good quarter of defense and maybe you get the win. It was a bit like the Knicks victory last night. This was gross, this game. But the Knicks limited the Pacers to two baskets in the fourth quarter. That's not a typo. Two baskets, and they won 92-84. I don't have a whole lot on this game. I did watch it down the stretch. Emmanuel quickly, I thought, played the best game of his season. I thought he was great. 16 points off the bench. I saw people commenting over at Posting and Toasting saying, like, quickly played like he did a few eight balls of medical grade shit pregame in the locker room because he was jittery and flying all over the court. And it's so true. So good game from him. Rose as well. But man, this was a brick fest, Lee, early on in Madison Square Garden. You know, the bing bongs were just the balls clanking off the net there. But
yeah,
I think I'm not sure the Knicks even hit a three, and the Pacers were like 1 for 9. They had a couple air balls in there, so they eventually played enough defense though to get the win.
Yeah, it was that bench unit again for the Knicks giving them that lift. And Emmanuel quickly, I think it's a bit of a reach here, but I think he's got some John Starks quality there that he can hit those threes and get the crowd going because he is all energy, he's all hype. He doesn't have the prettiest mechanics in the world, but the ball goes in 4 for 4 from downtown last night and hit some huge ones. And the Pacers couldn't hit a shot. I think in the last 6.5 minutes of the game, I don't think they hit a field goal. I think they hit a couple of free throws there, but could not hit. And Sabonis had almost the Patrick Ewing like rim out there as well. So it was great. The crowd was going wild again last night. And, you know, the Knicks, definitely they've got still some concerns with that starting unit, but the bench unit is giving them enough right now. So I think that's good. It shows at least they are a deep team, even if they're not all on the same page on the same night. So at least that's something there for Tibbs to work on. But yeah, fun game, fun last quarter again. I mean, I just love turning in to those last quarters and seeing the crowd going crazy and someone like Emmanuel Quickley, like you say, jittery, bouncy, but knocking in shots, taking them, not afraid to. That's where I draw the comparison as well with John Starks. He's like, all right, we haven't got much else going. I'm going to take these shots. And they worked for him last night.
Yeah. A part of me thinks like the Madison Square Garden crowd loves like a 92 to 84 game than like a 120 to 118 game. It's like it does take them back to the heyday, the Starks days of the Knicks, you know, play on your Bulls train because it wasn't pretty, but they do relish it, I feel like, in MSG, these type of games.
Oh, yeah. Mike Breen was loving getting to talk about Pacers versus Knicks from the 1990s, and it's impossible not to when you see a 92-84 score. Yeah, but this was not a fun fourth quarter to watch. I thought it was enjoyable, too, but not actually pleasing to the eyes. The bench versus starters thing is very weird, though, for the Knicks. For the third straight game, every one of their starters was negative, and every one of their players off the bench was positive.
Yeah.
Feels like Thibodeau is going to make a change at some point. He had kind of hinted at that, the fact that the starters in particular haven't been playing defense, and we know the Knicks' defense has really fallen off this season outside of like last night's fourth quarter, basically. So I wonder, though, like, where's the move to be made, right? Like, I don't think Kemba Walker's going to come out of the starting lineup. I don't think Mitchell Robinson's coming out of the starting lineup. Maybe Fournier? Like, maybe he gets a taste on the bench?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't know. The starters seem like the starters to me for the Knicks. They're just not very good.
Yeah, Tass, would you suggest to Tibbs a move? Like, is it taking Fournier out for somebody? I mean, Mitchell Robinson goes down with an injury again in this game last night, but what do you think?
If you take Evan Fournier out of the starting lineup, I mean, you're going to have the Knicks faithful hawking loogies on Tom Thibodeau, I think. I think, like, you will have such a backlash from this team from these this fan base after the signing that they made. Yeah. And I think
he
Evan
hasn't
Fournier,
been that great. I mean, he had one game.
He
has really good.
But they signed him to a big deal, and he wasn't very good as a Boston backup last year. So I don't think it's a recipe for success. I mean, it was the signing that wasn't the best part. You know, it wasn't the best move, IMO. But same with Kemba. I mean, they limit his minutes. You know, they obviously, you know, keep Kemba at like 20, 24 minutes, and whoever's going at the end, whether it's Quickley or Derrick Rose, plays at the end. But I agree with Trey that the starters are sort of the starters, and that's
You can't obviously bring Rose into that starting lineup. I don't think that would be good for the Knicks to have Kemba and then replace him with Rose. But Mitchell Robinson injured his ankle again, maybe out for a couple of games. But if they get a plus 22 off from Taj Gibson, they won't notice.
It's crazy.
I don't understand how, you know, I know the plus minus thing is a very weird stat, but he took two shots, had 8 rebounds and finished a plus 20. I think he was the best, in fact, for the Knicks on the night there last night. But
he is good, honestly, like when he's out there. He's
great in a backup role for 10 or 15 minutes, but if they start him like we saw in the playoffs last year, that's a recipe for disaster. But they may have to if Noel is still out, and we know that Mitchell Robinson tends to miss a few games when he goes down, so they might be a little bit shorthanded there.
Yeah. What about getting real crazy? I saw somebody on Twitter last night saying, just swap the units completely. All the bench guys, you start. All the starters, you go to the bench. Just see if it works. I mean, they got this victory, but the Knicks had been on a little bit of a slide there at home. They had lost 3 in a row and 2 overall. But, yeah, got it done. Outscoring the Pacers 23-10 in the final 12 minutes of this game.
I saw Bing Bong guy and Don't You Regret Not Coming to the Knicks guy were both in attendance last night. They linked up and got the W. So I guess that's the gruesome twosome to pair together, because Bing Bong and Face Shake, that ended up being a loss. So I'm glad to see they got the right combination there.
Oh, so it's like, they're trying to find the combo of of guys from that video that you get there in the building results in a win. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's early. Everybody's looking for their rotation still.
So. That's right. Finally, from last night's games, and again, we'll get to a few in the second block of this show after our first commercial break. But Tass, were there any other games that you just have to say something about?
Well, you guys mentioned how that game in New York was ugly. There was an ugly game going on in Cleveland as well, Boston in town, and neither team got to 40 points at half. It was not fun to watch. Writer for The Athletic, Jay King, reminisced while watching this game about an old series in 2002, a series probably no one remembers, Celtics and Pistons. It was a second-round series. Neither team in six games got to 100 points once. And, old 90s basketball. You want to talk John Starks? I saw the names of Mark Price and Ralph Sampson and Tom Chambers flying around the internet yesterday. That's fun. But in this game, it was not enjoyable. It came down to the wire with these two teams, and it was Ricky Rubio again for the Cavs taking the ball at Al Horford. Just a couple oldies to keep it old. It was just one-on-one. Rubio thought he had the advantage against Al Horford, and he was hitting again like shots he hit in MSG, some wild off-balance shots. But they desperately need Colin Sexton back. As much as I'm a Rubio fan, they do need somebody who can score. They also didn't have Jared Allen in this game. And it ended up the Celtics having enough offensively in a bad, bad game. Another bad game for Jason Tatum, who we've all sort of just, I think, labeled as a perennial all-star because of his status. But right now, he would not be an all-star the way he's shooting the ball below 40% this season. And they were able to just scrape by against a Cavs team who seems like, you know, they always have enough to win, next man up type of thing. But Colin Sexton really is needed for them to create. And they didn't have Jared Allen, who is a late scratch. And Evan Mobley finally had a bad game, started at center. He hit zero shots. Although, I say a bad game, still had five assists, because like LeBron, his passing is probably his best quality, but he's so good. Nine rebounds as well. They do have a limit, I think. Dean Wade was looking like Dean Wade, not D Wade out there. Lowry Markkanen, Kevin Love, Sexton out, Jared Allen out. I guess there is a limit for these guys. So, it's an ugly win for Boston, which I don't know, maybe they come around. Skeets, you are a fan of, or you thought they were going to be good this year. Their defense is really good.
Their defense has been good. Yeah, they're rough to watch offensively. It is not pretty. But got enough to get it done last night. I would just add for the Cavs, and I know you've been pushing the Rubio All-Star prediction since the preseason, which is amazing, and he's played great. I just don't like your team's chances of winning a game when Rubio is the one being asked to, like, actually score down the stretch time and time again. Because that's what I saw watching this game last night. It was like, hey, Rubio, can you go pull something out of your ass again here and, take a three or off-balance jumper? And he did hit a couple, but it was just like, he can't, that's not Rubio. That's never been Rubio. I didn't like the Cavs' chances to win when that was happening time and time again there down the stretch of this game, which was close. I mean, they were in it, but yeah, Boston got it done.
Denzel Valentine stepped on the sideline when he was trying to hit a three. That career, that's not going too well. And then Jetty Osman hit the side of the backboard. Although, he did do some good things. He definitely did. But, relying on a bunch of old names that sometimes they don't come through. I would want the ball more in Darius Garland's hands for sure. And you had to call on Colin, I think. At some point, he's got to come back. Because he's just a guy who gets you a bucket. Rubio should not be a 20-point per game guy. It's not his thing.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll get to some of the other games from last night in a little Is This News.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, back with No Dunks. Let's do a little Is This News. Hey, a little Is This News to allow us to still touch on a few games from last night. Got some headlines for you guys. Gonna throw them at you. Tell me not whether they're newsworthy. First one is from NBA.com. Ever heard of it? Luka Doncic leaves the Mavs' signature win with an apparent left ankle injury. Tass, is this news?
Signature win, NBA.com. I don't know about that. They won, and I would say that Luka Doncic will be back soon, because he's a tough SOB that has a lot of ankle injuries. And I'm going to say this isn't news because Kristaps talked to Luka after the game. And then Kristaps came to the media. He was asked, hey, did you talk to Luka? And he said, well, he said, hey, I'll be good. So you can look into it and say, it wasn't present tense. He didn't say, hey, I'm good right now, but I'll be good soon. All right, just give me a night. I buy that Luka will be back. And I think, even though it wasn't a signature win, that the Mavericks looking good with 30 assists on the night, especially Kristaps Porzingis. We are amidst the annual Kristaps Porzingis is looking amazing run. He had 29-11 in this one. He's 5-8 on threes. He's averaging 28 points per game his last five games back. Four of them, he had 20-plus points. And he played some five in the second half. The Mavs went a little bit smaller. And they're finding their rotations. Powell sat, so Porzingis played the five. More Jalen Brunson and Reggie Bullock in this game. Now, it's not a signature win because the Nuggets have so many freaking injuries. Not only Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., but as Trey talked about yesterday, Will Barton, a guy who has been so key for them, did not play in this game. So I'm not sure how you call any Mavs win this year a signature win. And I mentioned all those guys playing well around Luka. Luka getting everybody involved with 30 helpers. But I'm sure they're still looking for a star as the trade deadline approaches, because I just don't know how much you can ask of Luka to get from this roster. But they are winning games. They are 9-4, which is astonishing when you think about how badly it feels that they're playing. They have a negative point differential, which is odd for a team that's 9-4. Yeah. But they're somehow pulling out games, because it feels like, again, a year in and year out. You know, when you go into the playoffs with the Mavs, if they have a good matchup, yeah, they can win the playoff series. But if they don't, they're going to be just out-talented in a lot of different spots on the floor, and that's what's happening. They somehow win because of Luka. So if he's out for a couple games, then you're probably betting against them on BetMGM, because I don't know how they pulled it out of their butts.
Yeah, Lee, did you see the injury there where I think it was Austin Rivers sort of crashing into the back of Luka's ankle there, and he sat down right away on the sideline? There was an open seat baseline, and then sort of hobbled off very late in this game. But what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we will have to wait to find out, but Luka has had a heavy workload, and when you think back to the Olympics as well, he didn't get the summer off, so he's been playing a lot of basketball, and you just hope that doesn't catch up with him at some point. But I do want to just sort of go a little bit further on what Tass said there about Porzingis, because it's really been the whole month of November. He's been playing some really good basketball, shooting 50, 40, 90, he's averaging about 23 points, 9 rebounds, getting a block, and just showing that what his upside is, what his ceiling is, really does change the whole outlook, I think, for the Mavericks. But the big question will be two things. Can he stay on the floor now? And can he be consistent? Because that's always been kind of what's held him back. He might, you know, soon miss another 5 to 10 games, or he'll just sort of sleepwalk through games, or if he's not scoring, he won't do anything else. But he had 5 offensive rebounds last night, and I think that's just so big because he's such an important factor. You get guys like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, you know Tim Hardaway yourself, Skeetie, like one of the most, you know, feast or famine guys in the league. So those guys are going to be consistent like that, but Porzingis is the one that they need and they hope to be that, you know, basically that Scottie Pippen there to Luka. And he's been doing it for the month of November, and it's been working well for the Mavs. So good for them. Hold on to it as much as you can, because it just feels like in the past, history tells us that it won't last with Porzingis.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right. When he starts balling out is when he then picks up a weird, like, back injury or leg injury or something like that. Hopefully not for Mavs fans. Anything to add, TK, from this win over a very shorthanded Nuggets team, like Tass said, missing a lot of guys?
Not much to add. I think Tass is right. It's hard to call this a signature win. It does appear to be the Mavericks' first win against a team that is currently over 500, so right. I guess their best win of the season. I don't think the Donk's going to be out for too long. It was a weird-looking sort of injury, but he walked off, and he's a tough guy. Gets hurt all the time and comes back anyway, so maybe miss one game, but they got a couple of toughies coming up here. They play the Suns back-to-back and the Clippers back-to-back, both on the road. So four games against two teams, all on the road, starting Wednesday. Hope he doesn't miss a lot of time, because the Mavericks have gotten a bunch of wins here despite not looking great early in the season. So we'll see how they actually stack up against some quality competition.
Yeah, and look, Kidd got creative in last night's game. He went really small in the fourth quarter. A bunch of guards and then Dorian Finney-Smith as their 6'7" center. Because we had Porzingis and Luka on the bench, and they ripped off a run. You had Tim Hardaway hitting a three, DFS hitting a three, Bullock hitting a three, and suddenly, you know, they were up 10 with 6 minutes left, and it was a hell of a call. He said he talked about like wanting to like get the pace going a little bit against the Nuggets team, and it worked out last night. So signature win or not, it was a victory, and yeah, they have a great record. It is weird, Tass. 9-4? I mean, what? Mm-hmm. They're one of the better teams in the Western Conference. Records-wise, it's just you wouldn't think about it with some of their performances from this year. Next headline. From The Athletic. Ever heard of it? Mm-hmm. Kings Luke Walton on the hot seat again. Won't be given same leeway as last season. Now, Lee, this headline was out there before the Kings just destroyed the Pistons last night. So they were playing for Luke Walton's life, maybe. Hey, maybe they lose that game, he's gone. But, yeah, what do you think of, once again, the hot seat sort of rumors surrounding Luke Walton? But the difference, I guess, this time is, no, we're serious.
Yeah, well, the Pistons, I guess, just came up on the schedule at just the right time. I mean, I'll get back into Walton in a second, but what Dwayne Casey just says, right, we only play hard against the Raptors, and that's it. Who gives a shit anymore about any other team? Like, they get absolutely smoked at home by the Sacramento Kings. That's bad for the Pistons. But, yeah, Luke Walton, I mean, this is like Kristaps Porzingis about this time every year. It's like, oh, well, he's in trouble. He's on the hot seat. And I think it always still comes back to the fact what is in Walton's corner. He's got this year and next year guaranteed on his contract. And this is a franchise that's just like, we're paying five coaches every year. We just are. So that might hold, that might keep him going there. But with the Kings, you're never too far away from chaos. They always have little runs where it's like, oh, maybe they're starting to get it together. And then they'll just completely melt down and get blown out by 50 by somebody. So yeah, it's no surprise that Walton's on the hot seat. I'm not sure he's a great coach. I'm not sure he's the right coach for that team. I'm not sure that team is the best constructed it can be right now. The article goes into a little bit more about the sort of weird chemistry issues there with De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton, which seems to be continuing. I think they're both good players. I don't think they move off one of those guys yet. I think if they are to make a move, it's probably more Buddy. Obviously, he's continually in talks. And then Harrison Barnes, probably more so than the other two. But we'll see. It's the Kings. You know it's just going to, at some point, be chaotic. And then they'll be okay for a while. And then the chaos will return. So, Luke Walton's on the hot seat. No surprise here.
Right. Not news. Yeah, the Kings started 5-4, Tass, before they lost to the Pacers, the Suns, okay, the Spurs, the Thunder, but they pull out this one. You know, they want to break this 15-year playoff drought. Because I think if they don't make the playoffs, they set the all-time record. Is that correct? I think they're tied with the Clippers in terms of 15 years straight not making it. If they make it 16, that'll be their own record in the record books there. Not one you want. But I guess like another way to look at this, is Luke Walton coaching this team at the by the end of this season? Or, you know, can he survive because he's got to be paid a salary? It's like $11 million, like Lee said. Like, what do you think?
It's all about the playoffs. If they're in a playoff run and legitimately in a playoff run, then I think he sticks around. And if they're, you know, far out of it, then no, he's gone. But it really is up to De'Aaron Fox playing better. If De'Aaron Fox was anywhere near his regular self, then, you know, they're in a playoff hunt and they're playing they're playing well, but he is not. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if it's chemistry with Tyrese Haliburton and Davion Mitchell because they have three guards, but he's just playing poorly this year. If their best player was anywhere near their best player, then they'd be pretty damn solid. It's 14 games in. I don't know what's going on with the Fox.
Well, Luke Walton's lucky we got this play-in tournament, Trey, because, I mean, you're sort of in a play-in race. They're in the playoffs right now.
That's right. 10th seed, the 10th baby. Seed.
Yeah.
It's looking good. I'm with the Dream Shake. I just hear an 80s song when I think of Luke on the hot seat. Shout out to Steve Winwood. Back on the hot seat again. I think Luke Walton finishes the season. Sounds crazy. I think they're going to make the play-in tournament. The defense, it's improved, guys. Number 20 in the league, up from number 30. Right now, they're also a top 10 offense, number 7 in the league. Everything is trending up for the Kings. They just needed a little bit of motivation. Basically, coming out and saying, hey, if you lose to the Pistons, your coach gets fired. Maybe they need to do that every game. I don't know what it is. But I don't know. You know, it's November 16th. I'm putting my flag down. Kings are making the play-in tournament.
Wow.
It's official. 10th seed. 10th seed, baby.
I mean, it's like the teams when you look below them. I mean, I think you brought this up the other day, Trey. It's OKC that are 5-8, you know, which is maybe even surprising. The Wolves are 4-9. Ugh, they got to do something. The Spurs are 4-9. I don't think they're all that committed to, you know, trying to get into the play-in or try and make the playoffs. This is a rebuild. Got a lot of young guys. They want to compete, but they're probably okay with losing and then getting a draft pick. And then you've got the Rockets and Pelicans that are going to be battling for the best chances. You know, at the number, well, they're going to both be in the mix for the best chance at the number one seed, thanks to the lottery ball. So, yeah. So, I mean, just by like process of elimination here, there's
the Kings are in.
There's five teams. Kings are in. Luke Walton, maybe you're good.
That's like the first ever Australian Winter Olympic gold medalist. The guy was coming last in the speed skating.
I remember this.
Yeah, and the other guys all fell over, and he went over the finish line like this. He won. That's like the Kings. It's like we're way better than all those other teams because they're so bad.
That guy was on Australian Survivor.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah, I can't remember his name. Yeah, but he was part of the Champions crew. They had the Champions and then the Wannabe Champions or whatever.
Oh, cool. So, did he end up winning Survivor because everyone just like passed out due to exhaustion or something like that?
I mean, you'd think he's tailor-made for it because that literally is Survivor, just outlasting everybody on the rink. But I didn't get that far yet. But anyway, cool story, bro.
Stephen Bradbury, I think, was his name. I think.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Guy's got three first names. Stephen Brad Barry. Cool.
Just changes his name.
One thing, one little note task from this game, Kings Pistons game, which was over in a hurry because Sacramento was up huge, was Marvin Bagley getting a little burn there for the Kings. He played about 18 minutes, got his shots up, took 9 attempts, 3-9 though, and he was a positive overall in this game where they killed Detroit. But I bring him up because he hadn't been playing. And there was this weird thing going on with his agent. We already know with his father talking about the organization. There has been rumors that the Pistons could be a team that would take a flyer, I guess, on Marvin Bagley III. So do you think that's something they should consider? And what would it take to maybe get it done? Or are you like, no, thanks?
Well, at least he played. There was, you know, from the Kings side, there was that report and a video clip going around of Marvin Bagley being asked to enter a game earlier this season,
right,
and Bagley just waved it off. No, thank you. I would not like to play right now. And so, yeah, a huge back and forth between the agent and the organization. At least he got on the floor. I guess that's a good sign. For the Pistons, a bad sign, though, that they're willing to take chances on everybody's other players. That just seems like, well, that's all the Pistons do, unfortunately. I mean, they hit some gold with Jeremy Grant, but then they do things like Dennis Smith Jr. and Josh Jackson and even a Plumlee. You know, it just why would the Pistons do that? Unfortunately, they need to develop their own guys, I guess, is what I'm getting at. Just try and get the guys going that they drafted rather than do this again. I know a lot of the guys they drafted aren't playing all that well, but I don't think so. Even though I like Marvin, came on our show, wore the eye patch. I hope he succeeds somewhere, but I'm not sure if it would be with the Pistons.
Me nothing, I would absolutely do it if I'm the Detroit Pistons. If it's like a second round pick and, I don't know, Diallo
or
something.
That's what the Rockets did with Kevin Porter, really, wasn't it? They basically said, all right, we'll take him. I mean,
yeah. I just don't think you have anything. If you have nothing to lose, then yeah, I mean, maybe you get something from Bagley. I mean, the guy scored in the league. Now he sucks on defense, and he's not a great backbone of a defense as a big guy for sure. He needs to work on that, but he is a scorer, like a 14, 15 point per game scorer in his couple of seasons. I just think if it costs you nothing for Detroit, Lee, I would take a flyer. I mean, they did it with Josh Jackson, like you said, Task. He hasn't actually been that bad for them. I mean, they play him. He's in the rotation, which I know they don't want, but you do have to play some guys that know how to play. So I would if it was cheaply. I don't know.
I would for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't think obviously the Kings are going to keep him. He doesn't want to sign there. So, yeah, you just throw, I don't know, a second round pick and a expiring contract and see if the Kings just bite on that. Because I don't really think they're going to get much in return anyway, Sacramento. Everyone knows the situation there. So,
yeah,
you may as well. And if you're Detroit, you're not a free agent destination. So you have to try to unlock someone like that who absolutely has the potential, but we just haven't seen it in Sacramento.
People are saying it's not a coincidence he plays against the Detroit Pistons last night to say, hey, look at this guy.
Little showcase game. And personally, sure. I'm salivating at the idea of a beef stew and bag of beans front court there for the Detroit Pistons. Whew, sounds nice. I would take a chance on him, too. Still only 22 years old. If you're giving up nothing, maybe the beans are nice running with some young players who handle the ball.
It's possible. All right, final headline here. This is a weird one. From ESPN. Ever heard of it? The Minnesota Timberwolves fined $250,000, $250,000 for player activities in Miami area this past September. Again, strange headline, Trey. Is this news and can you explain it to me?
I'll say this is news only because of where it happened and how the Timberwolves got caught. From the ESPN report, the team had a dinner and workouts at the home of new minority owner Alex Rodriguez, ever heard of him, in the Miami area in September, ahead of training camp. Posts on social media showed at the time. So pretty weird stuff that basically the Timberwolves went over to Alex Rodriguez's house, had a hangout, had some workouts, and that's not allowed because he is technically an owner of the team right now. Just seems very strange, like... Could the Timberwolves have gotten away with this if they just didn't put it on the gram? Mm-hmm. It's not like the practice has done them any good. Paying $250,000 for this practice, which is fine because A-Rod made $441 million during his playing career. Okay. I assume he'll pick up the tab on this one, as he probably did for the dinner as well. But this is very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weirdly that... From what I can tell, players can do this on their own, right? Yeah. Like LeBron can call the vets together and say, come on over, let's kick it, and let's work on our games together. But if it's a team sort of led thing, activity, where they're footing the bill and maybe flying them in or whatever, I don't know, then that's against the rules and it's a pretty obvious breaking of them.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a player who maybe was a free agent in there, I can understand it, but it's your own team and your own players, like, you're tampering with your own players, aren't you? Is that right? I mean, like I don't really see, like, the new owner, he's obviously based, or, you know, he's got a property down there in Miami, and he says, hey, let's go and work out in Miami instead of Minnesota. And that costs him $250,000. Right. Weird. Very weird stuff.
Yeah. Tass, anything to add to this very strange headline?
Well, you know that Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lowry, they're not technically the owners quite yet. It's, you know, a process that's happening. So hopefully this doesn't dissuade him from buying the team. I don't know. I mean, $250,000, yeah, dropping the bucket, as Trey said. But Alex Rodriguez, I guess he's broken some rules in the days, a rule breaker. I'm sure this is nothing. It's nothing for him.
What did he do?
I don't know.
What did this guy do, breaking the rules? He said he was a rule breaker.
Well, he kissed glass. I think he kissed some, he licked some glass once.
I don't think that's a lot of germs on glass. Yeah. Oh, is he on steroids?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
Yep. Everybody knows that. Everybody was on him. I was on steroids there for a couple of years.
You were huge.
Temper boy. Yeah, exactly. Before we take our final break and get to a very fun Lee Ellis tweet of the night, if you enjoyed the masterclass Metallica ad read, you're going to love Lee's tweet of the night. I did call on Twitter for people to send in players that they think have disappointed them this year so far. A lot of votes, Tass. You brought up Fox. He was getting a lot of replies to me on that tweet. Same with Jason Tatum. You know, there are people who are saying Porzingis as well. But if you have them, let us know in the stream team. Let us know in the YouTube comments, because I think tomorrow I'm going to try and do like a, maybe a top 10 list of players that have just disappointed us so far this year. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to like avoid, you know, Ben Simmons not playing and Kyrie Irving not getting vaccinated to play. And like, yeah, that's disappointing. You know, John Wall, what the Rockets are doing with him. But like guys that are actually out there that are really struggling to hit a shot or to contribute. And I'll do like superstars and probably guys that maybe we thought might take a jump that are in their second or third year that are still struggling. So if you have some suggestions, holler at me on Twitter at JE Skeets, or again, let us know in the stream team or in the YouTube comments below. Disappointing players. We'll get to that tomorrow. All right, let's take one more break and then we'll get to Tweet of the Night.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Okay, this is going to be fun. Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Lily, what do you got, man?
Yeah, well, I have to give you the credit for this one, Skeetsy, because you did throw this into Slack last night. It's not technically one specific person's tweet, but it was a tweet that was going around. So it's just a text of the night, really. So it's text of the night. Anyway, here it is. JD's got it there. And it's basically just listing off your best concert experiences, or worst. And so, look. You know, I love this sort of stuff, so I'll go first here. Okay?
I think you're going to be the only one to go.
I think JD, no, no. JD will be in it. JD. Okay. First concert for me was U2 at the MCG in Melbourne in 1993. 70-plus thousand dudes and dudettes were there. Great, great fun.
Okay. If I remember correctly, 70,000 dudes just dressed exactly like me.
Exactly. Yeah, I think Pearl Jam even opened for them too that night. So it was
holy crap! That's a crazy first concert.
Pearl Jam.
And U2.
All right. Last concert I went to was Alanis Morissette only a couple of months ago at the amphitheater here in Alpharetta. She put on a great show, and Garbage also played that day. Garbage still a thing, still going around.
I always thought they were trash.
I heard Tasha had tickets to that show, but he refused when he found out they weren't going to recycle.
Best concert I've ever been to. You guys probably know the answer. Anyone want to take a guess here?
I mean, it's Robbie Williams.
Robbie Williams at Networth 2003. Actually, it's a tie. Fat Boy Slim at Brighton Beach. Talking about that the other week, it reminded me. That was awesome. That was bigger than Robbie Williams. I forgot just how big it was. It was like not a scheduled one to be that big, but it was awesome.
Are you including the Fat Boy Slim one because you also put on a concert at that concert? if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I did.
What were you singing again? People stopped and we were like, oh.
I was singing More Than Words by Extreme. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And all the people messed up on drugs were like, whoa.
Yeah, that was
this
like,
guy's good. they're like, best concert, guy outside of Fatboy Slim singing Extreme's More Than Words. Just the first 30 seconds.
Worst concert I've ever been to. Well, this one's also a tie. I'm going, unfortunately, with The Cure at Air Canada Centre. I've talked about it. They just didn't bring the energy for the fans. They played their music, was fine. I love their songs. But it was just like, we're just here because we have to be here and we're going to play our music. But also, Guns N' Roses, also at the Air Canada Centre. It was Guns N' Roses. It was Axl and Band. He turned up late and then he kind of insulted the crowd by just saying, yeah, I'm late, but who gives a shit? And then it was like he got out of the block slow and I left. I left after like three songs. I'm like, this is not right.
Wow,
I mean, with no Slash as well, it's like it's not really the same anyway. So disappointed there with
I love how much it feels like you at a concert, you love the artist talking to you.
What's up, Toronto?
You more than anyone is really like live and die by a concert of the back and forth between the band and the artist and the crowd.
Yeah, because you don't need to do hardly anything to get the crowd on your side. Like Bon Jovi one time in Toronto was in Montreal the night before. And he kind of took a dig at the Montreal Canadiens. He's like, we were in Montreal last night, great city, but not as good as the Leafies. And the crowd went crazy. I mean, that's all you have to do is just like, you know, piss in their pockets a little bit and the crowd's on your side for the rest of their night. Loudest one, really, that one's the toughest one to answer because I don't remember one that I was like, oh, wow, this is far too loud. They're all kind of loud, you know. I don't know. I couldn't come up with
one, really.
Not an answer for that one that really stood out to me. Most surprising. So this was The Darkness who opened for Robbie Williams at Nebworth in 2003. Now, most surprising because they were incredible from the start. Growing on Me was their first song. I still remember the first like riff, just no, and like everyone's like, oh, that's not too bad, and they were huge. After that.
I hope they piss in my pocket throughout this show. They tell me how great my city is, or this show sucks.
It was a really good performance from The Darkness. The bands I've seen the most, I've got that as a tie. I've got U2 four times, Melbourne, London, Buffalo, and Madrid, and then Bon Jovi. London. Yeah, well, I tried to see U2 at the Air Canada Centre in May of the All That You Can't Leave Behind. No, it was Elevation Tour. Couldn't get a ticket. They went all around America. They came back and Buffalo was the closest and I got a ticket to Buffalo. So, it was fine. Bon Jovi, I've seen them in London, Atlanta twice and Toronto, so four times each for those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next concert, I have tickets for Elton John in Atlanta in September next year. I know this is the fourth time he's had his final tour. So I'm gonna wear the shirt that I bought like 3 years ago for the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour because he's coming back again.
You know what? We gotta start doing that. We gotta take that and apply it to our show. Like every podcast is our last podcast. It's the last one, guys.
That's crazy.
Just come on back tomorrow.
I mean, literally every time you give an Elton John concert report, I'm like, oh man, that was his last tour. I really would have liked to see Elton John, but I guess he's gone for good now. Until the next year, please go on again.
I know. I'm sort of thinking like you'll probably be back after that as well. But I am actually taking my two boys to their first concert. It's going to be Elton John's last concert. So, they'll be 10 and 6. And they love Elton John. And I thought, you know what? This might be one of those memories that they're going to have forever, one way or the other. First concert, Elton John. Hopefully they enjoy it.
Oh, it'd be great. Like, you know, 40 years from now, they'll be on a podcast. This tweet will be back around, and they'll be saying Elton John, oh, my old man. Now, we thought it was Elton John's last show, and again, he played 10 more years.
They'll be like, actually, my next concert is going to see the last Elton John again.
Yeah.
And the wished I could have seen, I'm going very specific on this one and going to Live Aid 1985 at Wembley, mainly because, of course, the incredible show that Queen put on. I think it was only 17 minutes, but some of the most important 17 minutes in musical and world history. Freddie Mercury just like,
World history.
Like, in terms of like a guy who was born to be on the biggest stage in the world and just like had the crowd eating out of his hand, Freddie Mercury put on just the most amazing show. Elton also played there, by the way, too. For me, Michael Jackson probably would be the overall answer here to see him live. But if I could choose one particular moment, it would be Live Aid 1985 there at Wembley. I think we were actually in England, too, at the time, visiting my grandma.
Oh,
but,
wow.
I was only 9 years old. I don't think Mum and Dad were prepared to take me to, like, 95,000 at Wembley. But, great stuff.
If only they had recorded it or, I don't know, televised it or something, you could have enjoyed the concert.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
We probably did have it on during the day. I don't think Gran had a VCR. I just didn't know the impact it was going to have at the time. Certainly not Freddie and Queen. That's one of those ones that I can watch back on YouTube just over and over again, because when he gets to the end there and he does We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions, like, it's incredible stuff. And when he just does the AO, the Trey AO to the crowd there, oh my God, what an incredible moment. So that's for me.
There it is. So you went through them all here.
Yeah.
First concert, last concert, best, worst, loudest, most surprising, seen the most, next concert, and wish I could have been. JD, I did want to hear, I don't know if you have an answer, for the wish you could have seen live, like a concert you wish you could have attended. Do you have
one? Lee just mentioning Alanis, I wanted to go to that show, but I couldn't for some reason, so I'd love to see Alanis Morissette. She's one of my favorites, but I think the one that I would really, really have loved to have seen is the Sex Pistols back in the 70s,
Sure.
I was just way too young, and I think they did play Toronto at one point, but that would have been awesome. But yeah.
Okay.
And the Beatles, of course.
Yeah.
That's a good
one. Yeah. Don't they have there's like a Peter Jackson, I don't know if it's what is it, like a two-night, three-night event?
About Trey. Get Back.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I've only seen a couple of little trailers here and there. I'll partake in that as well. I think it's a documentary about the making of Get Back.
Yeah.
I think
that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I think it's like a couple episodes or something like that. How long did that take you, Lee, to put together that list?
Not long, really. I mean, the answers popped into that. It was a great tweet when you sent it through last night. I was like, oh, great. Good stuff, Skeety. Well done.
I did enjoy that you were like, who was the first person to tweet this?
Well,
I don't know, man. It's like going around Twitter. There's like a million people responding. Yeah. I did look. I couldn't find who the first person to send this send this around.
I looked as well, but it just was basically was like one link after the other after the other after the other. All right, fine. We don't have to credit someone for this.
I'll also say... we've had this conversation before, but you're 100% wrong on The Cure. And The Cure was my first concert. So
I don't know how you can say I'm 100% wrong for an experience that I had that you weren't there for. They were bad. The music was great. I love
exactly.
Their song.
It's a concert. but I don't know what you're talking about.
There's way more to a concert than just getting up there and playing your songs. There's crowd interaction. Yeah. There's making the crowd feel like you're there and you care about them.
Go see Kiss. Have you seen Kiss?
I have seen Kiss.
They're the masters at what you're talking about.
Exactly.
It's like, we were in Montreal last night. It wasn't even hockey related. It's just like, you think Montreal knows how to rock?
Yes.
And everybody
That's exactly
goes,
my
Ew.
Point. Kiss put
it's
on an incredible
so cliche,
show.
So cliche, though, Lee. Yeah. This is the part I can't get over.
But
it's
you go to a concert and you're in the mood, right? You're seduced by the band. They're putting on a great show. You want them to tell you, hey, we love you as much as you love us. We don't want you.
Why?
Because it's a part of the performance. It's a part of the entertainment.
But that's the thing about The Cure. That's part of the performance. They're too cool to be there, and so are you. And you want them to be too cool to be there.
No, they're not too cool to be there. They're just like, oh, fuck, I can't believe we have to do another one of these
things.
That's
right.
That to me is like, I'm like,
that's the point.
I'm like, I'm the easiest sell. I'm the easiest sale at a concert. I have a beer or two. I'm buying the $45 piece of shit t-shirt that cost them 20 cents to make. I don't care. I'm into it.
You just want to be told how great you are.
Not how great I am. I want them to just say, oh, we love being here, man. We want to be a part of this. You are so glad you're here. Instead, it's just like, yeah. Friday, I'm in love. Here you go. There you go. Have it.
Hey, you should take your own advice. I've done enough live shows with you. I've never once heard you tell the audience, thank you, Chicago. Yeah. All-Star Weekend is just the greatest night of my life. It's an honor to be here talking with my friends in front of you. You've never done that, ever once. So people are leaving our shows going, well, fuck, they were really funny. They knew the basketball. But
people couldn't get enough of our last show in Chicago. That was great.
Okay.
That was awesome.
That's because you were too cool, man. You're too cool. I love that about you.
If we go this year, we'll actually be able to say hello, Cleveland.
Charlotte doesn't know how to podcast. We were in Chicago years ago at this point. They did not know how to
podcast. it's a part of it, man. It's part of the magic.
Okay, it is for you for sure. Okay, Pick'em results brought to you by BetMGM. It was Devils versus Da Lakers. Lakers were favored by 1.5, and they got hammered, as we talked about to start this show. Nice victory there for Tass and Trey backing the Bulls. No surprise with Trey, of course. And that win ties him with me for last place. We're 5-6. Lee also had the Lakers with me, so we got it wrong. Lee 6-5, and Tass is up front, 2 games clear of Lee at 8-3. 3 games on tonight, Tass. What's our pick 'em?
Well, there's no choice. We got to go with Kevin Durant versus Steph Curry. Nets. Warriors. The Nets are at home and are favored by 2.5, surprisingly, to the Golden State Warriors. I guess because it doesn't feel like the Nets are 10-4. The Warriors definitely feel like they're 11-2. But 1 versus 2 in scoring. Kevin Durant number 1, Steph number 2. But one team playing a lot better, it feels like, in the Golden State Warriors. So I assume that's why 3 of us took the Golden State Warriors. Skeets, out on an island, taking the home team in the Nets. Why are you taking the Nets?
Oh, I mean, I think we're not talking about KD and the Nets enough, if I'm being honest. And Harden, who's now suddenly turned it around. I was shocked when you guys, I think I made my pick first maybe this morning. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll take the Nets. That's a small line. You know, they're at home, whatever. It's on TNT. It should be a great game. And then everybody else took the Warriors. And then I started to panic. I was like, is Kevin Durant playing? Like, do you guys know something that I don't know? Because I know he had a bit of a...
He's playing.
He's not a shoulder injury, right?
He's not on the injury report. No Joe Harris sitting out for the Nets. No, but otherwise... Yeah, anyway. The Warriors. Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Nets are an unheralded 10-4 right now. It is.
Yeah.
They are up there. They've got as good a record as the Chicago Bulls, but there's been a lot more words spoken about the Chicago Bulls. Yeah, the Nets are just humming along, doing it.
They got a bit of a scare on Friday night against the old Pelicans there. They pulled it out, but maybe it was the Pelicans.
Yeah, but that's... Yeah. We just saw that happen last night.
Yeah, I know. But this game, you could easily make a case for either team. Could go either way.
No, I mean, don't back me. it's not been great for old Skeetsy here, so I'm sure the Warriors win one, but I have the Nets winning by 3 or more points. I do need to cover there. Let's not forget that. So, yeah, that's the first game on TNT, followed by the Sixers-Jazz, and there's also some Spurs-Clippers action. We'll be back tomorrow to break it all down. Guys, go get your No Dunks gear over at NoDunks.com. Got a new Pacer shirt. Got the new Classic Factory shirt. There it is, showing you here on the YouTube. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the stream team.
Stream team, we love you! You're the greatest!
It's our final show. Like, what a way to go out. What an ending. That is amazing.
Our biggest, best show of all time, last show. You'll never see us again.
Oh, man. When we were in Toronto, they didn't know how to rock like these stream teamers do, man. This is great.
Yeah, the no dunk stream teamers, they rock more than the no buffs or the no breaks stream teams. There is no doubt. Go get yourself an Athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/no dunks. And yeah, again, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about all the NBA games and storylines, 10 a.m. Eastern, live here on YouTube. Till then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and just wanted to tell you about an email I just got from Paul Flannery. Subject is Runners I Know, J.E. Skeets. Can't wait to read about J.E. Skeets. He's a runner that Paul knows. All right, this is cool.
Damn, Paul Flannery, he works quick. I just talked to him yesterday.
Well, there's a photo of Skeets.
Blabbing away. Oh, excellent. Yeah, let's forward that to everybody on the stream team if you want to know about running.
Leave your email address down below in the comments.
You can get on Flannery's running newsletter. It is fantastic. You should. All right. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Brace the day, people. You could stay.